This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, welcome back to the second week of the TJ and Todd's Tailgate, nicely renamed by the Place to Be Nation. The fine folks over there, they put some great production behind the first week's episode, the first episode of the show, and hopefully you guys are back for week two of the college football season. So let's start this week's program out with the big news of the week, Todd. And we spoke about this offline, and I'm glad to have you on, you know, as being, you know, an SEC expert, I guess you could say, being in Missouri, following the Tigers. The biggest news from last week is the name of Kenny Trill. You know, I don't know about you, but this shook my entire week. What say you?
I mean, what can you say? If, you know, the big storyline before the season started was, could he step into Johnny Football's shoes? Because those were awfully big shoes to fill.
Yes.
And in his first game out, not against, you know, Rice or UTEP or North Texas, he goes up against one of the most promising teams in the whole SEC and breaks a single game yardage record. So, I mean, you can't really get off to a better start than that. I mean, he was fun to watch. I think part of it was his talent. I mean, he wasn't a nobody.
Right.
I think another part of it is kind of South Carolina's defense being a little worse than expected. But, yeah, I mean, hey, what else can you ask for?
Yeah, and I agree with that one. I mean, he threw for, was it 400 or 500 yards? Somewhere in that realm. I knew it was a record.
Let me pull up his stats here.
Well, while you pull it up there, you know, it was a blitzkrieg on South Carolina. Now, they go back home to play, like, Sam Houston State or whatever, thank you for coming, university that's going to be in College Station. But is this the beginning of, you know, taking A&M and really making them a serious contender to what we spoke last week with LSU and Alabama as the cream of the SEC West crop?
Well, I think before the season started, they had to have circled this game as one of their toughest tests because South Carolina is supposed to be one of the best teams out of the East.
Right.
They're one of the teams that I think a lot of SEC pundits think could compete if they were flip-flopped into the West. And they did it on the road, first game of the season, on national TV. And looking up here, so Hill went for 40, it was 44 for 60, 511.
44 for 60.
Or 8.5 per attempt, and three touchdowns, no interceptions. So I don't care if that's against Sam Houston State
right.
or South Carolina. That's pretty damn good. And conversely, you know, Dylan Thompson, who was supposed to be, this was supposed to be his, you know, stage to shine as the experienced guy that had a couple wins under his belt, kind of fell on his face a little bit, even though he had a pretty good day, four touchdowns. He just kind of hit or miss. But, you know, on A&M's end, you've got to think, yeah, the recruiting has been there. Someone recruits at a high level, especially now with Texas kind of taking a step back. You know,
right.
He's bringing in kids at A&M that wouldn't have given them a second thought 5 years ago. So the big question was, are those recruits going to step up? And if they're anything like Kenny Hill, you know, there's a lot to look forward to in College Station.
Yeah, you don't say. So what else from this weekend, you know, surprised you? Because Alabama, they look good, but not what you expect to see, you know, a Nick Saban-led Alabama, you know, team, you know, blowing teams out. When they, like, for example, when they played Michigan, I think it was two seasons ago, with Denard Robinson coming in as a Heisman candidate, they just completely kicked their ass and led that, you know, stifled that offense to nothing. But this week against, and I'm blanking who they're playing, because I know Florida State played Oklahoma State.
West Virginia.
The West Virginia, yes, thank you. You know, Lane Kiffin's offense looked good. I think they gained around 400 yards in offense. But it looked like the defense, you know, they weren't that Alabama, you know, kick-your-ass defense. Am I crazy for thinking that they aren't what, you know, they aren't the national title contender that we thought they were a week ago?
I think coming into, you know, coaches always say before these first games, that they hope that they're in mid-season form. Mm-hmm. And I think very rarely is that true. I think A&M was in mid-season form, but I also think that they're not quite as good as they showed against South Carolina. And I think South Carolina is not going to be nearly as bad as they showed against A&M. And you can kind of roll that over into the Alabama and Florida State games, where I think Alabama is they're really, you know, you brought up that Michigan game, and that was kind of a and they had a series with Penn State that was kind of the same way.
Right.
Alabama is not really known as a team, and Nick Saban is not really known as a coach that against a non-rival opponent, you know, not LSU or not Auburn, he's not going to put the, you know, pedal to the metal and run up the score, even if he can.
Mm-hmm.
I think West Virginia played them a lot closer than they thought. But then again, you know, West Virginia is not an FCS school. They're not in the Mountain West. You know, they're a big team. They're not going to go into that game and just lay flat on their backs just because it's Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State, same thing. You know, they played a team that has won double digits, I think, three of the last 4 years or something like that.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma State. You know, those are West Virginia's kind of struggling, but they're not bad programs at all. You know, Oklahoma State's one of the top 15 or so in the country the last 5 years. I think you just kind of have to say, hey, they won. It was a good wake-up call for their players. And when you're Alabama and Florida State, you know, every week you're getting your opponent's best shot.
Of course.
So it didn't matter if it's Virginia or if it's, you know, Alabama, Birmingham. They're going to leave it all on the field when they get, you know, a chance to play you. I don't really think you can take too much from either, to be honest.
I gotcha. You know, before we move on past this Alabama game, I want to bring up T.J. Yeldon. Came in with a Heisman hype, 126 for 23 yards. Did he impress you this first week, in his, Heisman campaign season?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, he's a Heisman candidate. He's a running back at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the offensive line almost every year that's just chock full of NFL talent. So, you know, I expect to see 126 yards from him against a team like West Virginia that traditionally has just an awful defense. I think he was dwarfed by what happened with Todd Gurley at Georgia, but
right.
I'm sure we'll get into
right.
that.
Yes.
I think the biggest question was, you know, Yeldon was great. Blake Sims was just kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
No touchdowns, threw a pick. Had about 250 yards passing. You know, there was kind of rumblings that maybe he was going to get pulled in that game.
Mm.
And I think what you need from a guy like Sims, even with, you know, Yeldon, who's an All-American caliber running back, and Amari Cooper, who's an All-American caliber wide receiver, is you need him to not make stupid mistakes.
Right.
And no touchdowns, one interception, 250 yards. That's not going to get it done when you're starting to go up against LSU, A&M, some of those teams in the SEC. So you just got to have him be smarter.
Yeah, you are 100% correct on that one, especially seeing they just lost AJ. You know, that transition from Greg McElroy to AJ was seamless. Maybe this transition to the next guy is not going to be so nice. I mean, you look at Texas. Texas had B.Y. or Vince Young, one from him to Colt McCoy, didn't miss a beat. Then they went to Garrett Gilbert, and all hell broke loose, which eventually cost Mac Brown his job. So, I mean, it's not going to cost Nick Saban his job. I think he could take a car and run into an orphanage and be coming out blowing a .2 on a DUI case, and they'd still build him another statue if they won the next national title. But, another thing from this week, you brought up, Todd Gurley. Georgia, they blew their doors out on Clemson, 45-21. But compared to Georgia, Auburn, or LSU, which one had the more impressive win on Saturday?
Those three, you got to say it's Georgia. I mean, they're
really
the only team outside of A&M that stood out to me and really looked like a contender. And, you know, Georgia is a hot pick to make the SEC title game, but I think that they've got enough talent to at least be in a discussion for the playoff coming into the season. And Gurley, I mean, you know, there's a lot of questions about Gurley. You know, he was up there with Yeldon and Mike Davis and some of the other guys in SEC.
Right.
As, you know, a Heisman candidate, as an All-American candidate. And unlike those guys, he had serious injury concerns. He missed a lot of last year. The team had a lot of injuries last year, kind of limped to the finish line. And he topped out at 198 yards, had three touchdowns, and of course that kick return. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't ask for a better return to Georgia than Todd Gurley did. That was just incredible. And I think Clemson is going to kind of fizzle out. I think they lost too much. Mm-hmm. They're not the number six team in the country. But still, you know, they went into halftime in that game, tied 21-21. And Gurley just kind of took the rock and said, no, you know, not in our house, not going to happen.
I think the only thing he could have did on top of rush for the 198 yards was save Uga from a pond. He could have rescued Uga from a burning building, and that would have been the only cherry to the top of his weekend.
Yeah, I mean I'm scared of watching that guy play in Columbia. I know that.
Oh God! Oh, I didn't even think of that coming to Missouri. Jesus, because the SEC East, man. So they're coming to Missouri. You don't have to go to Athens, right?
No. October 11th, I think they play here. And really, just to go off on a sidestepping, that whole SEC East, I think all of us, the teams that are kind of picked to be in that top spot this year, Georgia, South Carolina, and Missouri, all play each other by mid-October. So wow. It'll be over pretty soon.
Huh, that's weird. Whereas it seems like the SEC West, they come late November, you know, with the Iron Bowl being the last week, you know, the last regular season game. It seems like LSU, Alabama is around mid-November, so that's kind of weird how they schedule that.
Yeah, you know, from a TV standpoint and just from a ticket standpoint, you know, you want that going down to the wire. You don't want your fans by mid-October to, you know, that's kind of what happened with Florida the last couple of years is we know by week four that you're not in the running anymore. You know, a lot of your fans are going to stop coming unless you're in a school like Alabama. So, yeah, it is kind of weird. I can't think of a season where that's happened this fast, but you know, that'll be a different story for another podcast.
Yeah, that's true. I think we can do that in off-season one. But, you know, I disagree with you. I think LSU, their comeback win over Wisconsin, I think that's the most impressive victory over the weekend just because people are writing them off at the at halftime. You know, they saw Wisconsin was up by, you know, at least two scores. And then, actually, I'm pulling up the box score right here. Yeah, Wisconsin was up 17-7. And then it looks like they just put them down 24-7 in the third quarter. And then LSU just took over and just shut out Wisconsin's running game, which was running over them. And, you know, it seemed like it just made Wisconsin look like Vanderbilt. You know, was that a nice, you know, precursor to what we can expect LSU to be, you know, after – you know, that scare for the first half of the game?
Yeah, I think so. This was a game, one, as a neutral site. So anytime you do that, and really it was, I mean, I'm going to just go ahead and assume it's a lot closer to LSU than it was Wisconsin.
Oh, but, God, yeah.
it's still, you know, kind of odd. You know, Houston was kind of odd choice for this game. But I think anytime it's a neutral site, not on your home field, you've got kind of a weird mixture of fans. It's going to be kind of a weird game. This was a game where a lot of, you know, LSU, I kind of wrote about in our SEC preview for the site, they've kind of been ignored. Even though they've won 10 games the last 4 years, they're never in the same discussion as Alabama or some of the other teams, like even A&M, when they had Johnny Manziel. Mm-hmm. LSU was just kind of there.
Right.
Even though they're, you know, they're a top 10 team, top 15 team, you know, year in, year out. This was a game where a lot of people were putting money on Wisconsin and Vegas, you know, to cover the points or a win. So a lot of things were kind of lining up for LSU, you know, kind of getting ahead. The thing that stuck out is when you're playing with Wisconsin, you're only going to do one thing. They don't got, you know, Russell Wilson anymore, so they're just going to hand off the rock.
Right.
Because every year they've got a great running back and a great old-school power running back. Well, LSU plays in maybe the only other conference outside of the Big Ten that runs that kind of football anymore. So they're kind of built to curtail that. And we saw that kind of go off in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think the big story was for Wisconsin, man, they got to get something out of that quarterback. 50 yards, two interceptions, 2.1 per attempt. You know, that's not going to cut it if Wisconsin, the team that wants to have their, you know, their shot at the Big Ten title.
Well, what's this that their starter who should have been in there, it was a shoulder injury. Now he's a head case. Now it's back to shoulder injury. What are you hearing about that?
I gotta, you know, I can't tell you, because every time I think I got a finger on it, it turns into something else.
Right.
And, yeah, I don't know. And that's the kind of stuff that you don't want to happen at the quarterback position. You know, it's bad enough when somebody gets injured, and then it's even worse when it's something that, you know, you can't get an honest answer from your coach. It kind of reminds me, we were talking the last podcast about Martinez at Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of one of those guys, too, where even when he's not hurt, you don't know you never know what the next thing between him and the coach, or him and the program, or him and the players.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly not what you want at Wisconsin, because even with a great running game, you're going to need, you know, quarterback at the most important position, hands
right.
down.
Oh, yeah.
And you need your best leader at that spot. And stuff you're hearing out of Madison, you know, doesn't sound good.
No, I mean, it's weird. It's weird. But, you know, we touched a little bit on Florida State. They survived against Oklahoma State, you know, whenever James Winston needed to make a play. I mean, he had that gorgeous – yeah, I use gorgeous for a football podcast. I can use that. It's all right. He had that run that I think was a 32-yard, you know, QB sneak that got Florida State back in control of that game. But was there anything else this past weekend that really stood out at you as, oh, my God, this team is going to be a lot better than we expected? Or what in the bleep happened to so-and-so, like Clemson?
You know, out of that Florida State game, I kind of take it like the Alabama game. If you're a Florida State fan, you can't really – I wouldn't take too much good or bad out of that game, because you weren't playing, you know, a scrub team.
Mm-hmm.
All eyes were on you. Oklahoma State has lost a lot this year, but they've got a great coach. I think their quarterback, he showed a little, you know, a little here and there. Needs a little improvement, but they're not going to be dead at quarterback like I kind of thought they would. They got, you know, a couple of pretty good receivers like they always do. So I think you come out of that win alive, you know, if you're Florida State, it's a good day. Yeah, I think for Oklahoma State, you can take from that game that maybe you're not going to be the fourth or fifth team in the Big 12.
Right.
Which is kind of where I had to think this year. I thought maybe Texas or even Texas Tech would have jumped ahead of them along with Kansas State. And I think with the way they put up a fight against Florida State and really, you know, they fought them to the end. You know, they might be looking at that number three spot in the Big 12 again, or even number two. But I think for them, that was a great weekend. I think for Clemson, you know, you always hope for the best, because Clemson is a team that, you know, can have a good season even with a really embarrassing loss like that. They lost to Florida State last year. They got blown out at home in a game that could have been the ACC. But Clemson is a team that's known for losing on the big stage. So when you get beat down like that, especially in the manner you got beat down, where you were tied at half and it just fell out of your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Clemson takes a significant step back, but, you know, in the ACC, they can still find themselves looking at 9 or 10 wins.
You know, and before we move on to next week, I got to ask you this. You know, you brought up how they got blown out by Florida State. Clemson got blown out by Florida State at home. I believe they lost to South Carolina as well last year, which seems like they lose every year to South Carolina. Clemson does. Is this a little – this is McDabo Sweeney's seat a little hotter in that anytime he's not playing, you know, the Duke, the Wake Forest, the Georgia Techs of the world, this Clemson team gets beat?
I don't think it makes his seat hotter. I think it might make him reconsider what he just did in adding Auburn to that non-conference schedule. You know, it's not every year they're going to have South Carolina, Auburn, on top of Florida State.
Right.
So those blowout losses add up pretty quickly. But I guess on the converse, you know, if you're Dabo Sweeney and if you're Clemson and you're serious about making the national title game, you got to play those teams. You know, you can't just in the ACC, you know, if you don't have the pedigree of Florida State, you can't just get by on the Wake Forest of the world. You know?
That's true.
You need to have something when you're out on that outside looking in that number five or six spot that says, hey, we belong in this playoff discussion. And if you can beat, you know, on your good years, beat Florida State, take one or two of Georgia, South Carolina, and you don't know how Auburn's going to be in 5 years from now. You know, you take some of those on a good year, you're not going to get them all every year. Then you look like a genius.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, I don't think he's got a hot seat this year, but it's going to be interesting to see how that program stands up as Florida State kind of regains this, you know, hold on top of the mountain.
Mm.
And then, you know, hey, Duke continues to look decent. Miami, is okay, and you know, Georgia Tech kind of comes back, Virginia Tech, and the ACC gets decent again.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you can see a real hot seat here.
Well, you know, and as I said before we move on, one last thing here. Missouri, win. Look good. Indiana, win. Look good. And University of Pittsburgh, win. Look good. That's three of the teams that we personally root for, all looking good. I'm feeling pretty good for this season. What say you? For our favorite teams.
A lot of Missouri fans, and I was there at the game, they weren't very thrilled with how we played. I kind of chalk it up to a lot of the other games. It was like, yeah, man, over 100 degrees in that field.
Jesus.
And you can kind of tell that, you know, the Tigers were not thrilled to be running around in all black uniforms. And it was kind of like, you know, even when they're only up like 10, maybe in the third quarter, they're kind of like, you know, we know we're going to win this game.
Right.
Yeah, you know, Indiana makes a trip to Missouri this year, and I'll be at that game as well.
There you go.
Missouri's got kind of a game. People are putting money on Toledo. They go to Toledo this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Pitt, you know, hey, they're in a conference where anything's possible. You know, you're only a win or two away from taking that thing. So, all good so far. But really, there's not much you can say in a lot of these games.
Well, with that Pitt game, and I looked it up, and it's I just lost it. It's next week, the 20th, is whenever Indiana comes in, and you know, because I'm married, I have to say we'll beat the Tigers. It's just you know, no offense, just because I'm married, I gotta say it. But Pitt, they were, I saw Barrett Salele tweet out from Bleacher Report. Something on the lines of Pitt was one of four or five teams, Texas included, that didn't give up more than 150 yards on total defense. Now, yes, it was Delaware, but needless to say, that's a pretty damn good stat.
Yeah. Any time you're getting that low, it doesn't matter who you're playing. 150 yards, especially against a bad team, because, you know, come third or fourth quarter, you know, you don't even have a lot of your starters in, and you're against Delaware, you're putting in a lot of guys and aren't going to get a lot of snaps throughout the season. You want to see who's got it and who doesn't. So,
right.
You know, it's pretty solid effort.
And it was 57 yards. They gave up 57. So, but this week, we're done with week one. Week two. One thing that is kind of I'm going to be watching for on this one is that Texas BYU matchup, because as we said last week, UT gave up 510 yards on the ground to BYU. So obviously, they're probably going to be watching out for that. But my question to you, Todd, is they're starting Tyrone Swoops, their quarterback of the future, because David Ash has gone out with another concussion. Is this going to be the start of something great, or does Tyrone trip up here and it's a scramble to try to fill a quarterback spot for the rest of the year for the Longhorns?
Well, I think quarterback was the most important position heading into the season on offense,
right?
Because they've got such a great running attack.
Oh, yeah.
You know that's going to. You still need a quarterback to hand the ball off. And, David Ash, I mean, we can say what we want about his time on the field, but, you know, for just a guy, a 22-year-old kid, you know, it kind of sucks that you get your shot at playing for Longhorns at quarterback. Which,
right.
You know, for so many in Texas, that's, you know, they would much rather do that than, you know, play a snap for the Cowboys. Longhorn football is, you know, it's game. And it just kind of, you know, I feel bad for him that
mm-hmm.
his career's gone this way because he's been kind of eaten alive by a lot of his fans, and a lot of it's not his fault. But, you see a lot of football where, you know, backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team. So you can't ask for a better position because, you know, Texas is a talented team. You got great running backs, so if you're a quarterback, you know, not all the pressure is going to be on you to go win the game by yourself.
Right.
And I think that the Texas defense looked great, and they've got a lot to prove against BYU. And I'm sure a lot of those guys that came back this year hadn't forgotten what happened last year. So I fully expect, you know, a two touchdown or more win.
There you go. I think the line right now has them up 6.5 to 10, somewhere in that range. But speaking of injured Texas quarterbacks, Bryce Petty out in Baylor, he's got, I think, two cracked vertebrae or something's broken in his back or cracked ribs. I forget exactly what is wrong with him. But, you know, shouldn't Art Briles, I know they're trying to get him the Heisman. I know they're trying to, impress or increase their win margin so they can impress the voters when the playoff time comes. But doesn't it make sense to sit Bryce, you know, these next few weeks? Because this week, you know, they have another joke of a team coming into Waco and Northwestern State. Then they get Buffalo before they go to Iowa State. Does it make sense to sit Bryce until October?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you're thinking you can win all three of those games to back up. None of those teams, I mean, I can't say. I don't really know anything about Northwestern State right now.
God, why would Buffalo, you need to know? You know,
yeah, I wouldn't worry about Buffalo, and then Iowa State just got beat by North Dakota. So
right.
None of those, your legitimate playoff contender should be on your radar as losses. And just from what I get from Art Briles, he doesn't seem like the kind of coach that would keep in Bryce Petty, a guy that even if he misses those games, is still going to be very much on the radar of NFL teams in the offseason. You're pretty much, your chances at anything are shot. You know?
Right.
Forget the playoff. You're probably not beating out Texas or Oklahoma State for that shot at the Big 12 title coming in the year. And I think if you keep them in, or if you sit them out and you go through a 3-game stretch or 2-game stretch, depending on his injury, and you come out unscathed, you get him back at 100%, the games really matter.
Yeah.
Including, the national championship game, then you look like a genius. So I think it's best just sit them out. Rest on the guys you got. You recruited them to Baylor for a reason to let them play.
True. True. And, we were talking about Lions earlier. I saw a thing I'm in a Yahoo pick-em with a couple of friends here in Austin, to where the line for Michigan State, Oregon was 12.5, giving points to Michigan State. I mean, if I'm in Vegas, I put heavy money on that line for Michigan State because they're going to cover that line, correct?
Yeah, so I've seen like 12 points right now for Oregon. And I see this game going one of two ways. I think Oregon is going to win just because I think that there's been enough talk around our program now where they're kind of seen as a pretender more than a legitimate contender.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are really, I think inside their program, they really want to make a message. So I either see Michigan, I mean, it sounds stupid to say this, but I can see Oregon winning by 20, 30 points and just Michigan State coming out flat.
Wow.
Or I can see them covering, but covering in a one or two point, down to the wire.
Right.
I don't think Oregon is really built as a team to win close games against Michigan State. So if Michigan State keeps them hanging around, hangs around there in the fourth quarter, I don't think Oregon's got a huge home field advantage. Mm. I was a betting man, which I'm not. I'd probably, screw this up. I put the money down to Michigan State. I mean, 12 points for a top 10 matchup.
Right.
That, on paper, that's a lot. But, college football is not like the NFL. You never know what's going to happen.
That's true. But let's say Oregon does come out and they do impress by winning by 2 touchdowns. Does this vote, and Mark's, I'll put the preview in this one. Mariota, he goes for, 14 of 18, 280 yards, three passing touchdowns, and there are 2 rushing. Does that vault him to that leader for the Heisman spot after only 2 weeks of the season?
I think it definitely does because his competitor down to the south, Hundley at UCLA, right, looked last year down, or last week, I don't think he threw for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So he can light up the scoreboard like that against the number 17 in the nation. Those are the kind of things that will stick in Heisman voters' minds, in the winter. And I think this is a huge game for Mariota, and I think this is also a huge game for the Oregon defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mariota, you can kind of depend on him to go guns a-blazing no matter who it is, FCS, Michigan State, Stanford.
Right.
They didn't matter. He's going to come out and play. But that Oregon defense, as we saw against Stanford, is not built for this kind of old-school Big Ten football. I'm really interested to see if they can kind of keep Oregon in this game and help their guy out, help Mariota, kind of succeed.
Yeah, just last week against South Dakota, I mean, he went off for 267 and 3 touchdowns, and that was against South Dakota. He's a better performance this week against Michigan State, but I think not only if he does come out, as we just said there, that well, that can also help his draft stock And, you know, it's never too early to think about the 2014 or 2015 NFL draft. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, aside from that, just down south, Stanford and USC, that is the only other big matchup this week. So that being said, USC wins this. Is this going to be enough to start Baltimore to the top of that UFC South division in that they can really put some real pressure on UCLA?
I think it is. I think Stanford has a lot to play for in the game because, myself included, you know, a lot of people have kind of disrespected them coming into this season. They've proven time and time again that, you know, that they can take Oregon. Even though Oregon's got the cool uniforms, they're cool players, they're just a cool team. You want to see in that national title game. You know, it's been 2 years in a row now where Stanford's taken them out of national title contention and, you know, Pac-12 title contention. And you come into this season and you see Oregon sitting in at number three, Stanford outside the top 10. So if you're a part of the Cardinal, you got to be saying, you know, what else do we got to do to prove ourselves, you know, worthy of that same kind of opportunity in the preseason polls that Oregon just automatically gets off their name alone.
Right.
USC, I think if they lose this game, yeah, it's not a huge deal because I think outside of USC fans, I'm not expecting a national title run or a Pac-12 title run out of the Trojans. I think 9 wins would be awesome. Them, 10 wins would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I see the line to Stanford 3 points. So if I was, you know, going to put money on this game, I'd definitely take Stanford in that. I don't think USC is going to get blown out, but I think Stanford. I see about a 10-point win for Stanford.
It's not a bad win for them. But SC, don't they need this win to start building momentum for that eventual UCLA matchup? I mean, after Stanford, they go to Boston College. They have Oregon State and Arizona State. It seems like if they do get blown out, which I can easily see happening to where they only score 3 points at Stanford, you know, and then they go across the country to Boston College, it sets them up for failure with that beginning of the Pac-12 schedule, does it not?
It does, but, you know, I think USC is one of those schools where the expectations within their program are overinflated compared to what people objectively looking at USC are expecting.
Right.
My biggest thing with this game is they're having to go play Stanford on the road.
Yes.
So just right there, you know, that's going against you. Two, despite the sticker on their helmet, this is not, you know, the USC team of 10 years ago. And then three, they've got some chances in the Pac-12 to still kind of make those statement wins. You know, if they win that game at UCLA, I think that, you know, it kind of negates any wrongdoing that would have happened losing at Stanford.
Right.
They've also got Arizona State at home. You know, that's another great win for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they've got Notre Dame at home, which would be, you know, not a conference win, but that's still, from a program standpoint, if you take, you know, Notre Dame, UCLA, Arizona State, and then you drop the one at Stanford, that's still great. To me, just actually looking at the program. And I think it's a lot will say how they play in this game, whether they get blown out or whether they, you know, fight tooth and nail or, you know, they win. That'll say a lot more with how they go on the season. I think if they lose by 3, it's not going to derail their season. Mm-hmm. If they lose by 15, 20, then you might have some problems. But all is not lost if they lose this game in week 2. And kind of the way it goes with a lot of these big-name teams, you know, if you lose in week 2 to Stanford on the road, that doesn't hurt nearly as much if you lose to UCLA in, you know, in November.
That's a good point. That's a real good point, especially for this playoff. And time again, we've seen, you know, a team lose early and then kind of come back towards the end of the season once everybody else has their chance to lose. You know, it might have, that could be the reason why Alabama, on top of having an undefeated Auburn, got held out from, you know, contending for a national title game. You know, had Florida State lost between now and their, if it wasn't for the undefeated Florida State and Auburn, I think we could have seen Alabama creep their way back in had they've lost earlier rather than later. If that, you know, Auburn game was the middle of October instead of late November.
Well, because you know a team like USC, if I'm doing math right, they lose this team at Stanford, and then they run the table, they're going to be sitting at 11 wins.
Oh yeah,
and if USC is sitting at 11 wins. Nobody's even going to remember what happened in September.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, Condoleezza Rice and the rest of the group are going to vote them in just because, hey, they're a huge name. And seeing a bunch of Trojan fans pack the, you know, the AT&T Stadium in Dallas, or I guess Arlington, will, you know, be a great visual to see for the title game if they would make that. Or isn't one of the playoff games at the Rose Bowl as well?
Yeah, I think it rotates. Yeah. Where the BCS Bowls are now the
playoffs.
You know, playoff games. But I'm going to assume that there'd be some way that, you know, surely they'd keep USC out of the Rose Bowl. But I don't know. Just to me, now that would be kind of unfair, but I haven't looked into how the seedings and scheduling would work yet.
Oh, come on, SEC. Wouldn't the great Auburn or the great Alabama go into the Rose Bowl with USC in there and still be able to beat them down?
Yeah, I mean, hey, they would. You know, either of those teams would smack USC around. But, you know, I think that from an equity standpoint, what they're going to want to do is kind of keep that from happening. I don't know if that happened this year, but I think what you run into is, you know, if a team like USC or Stanford, you know, that's known to hang around this top 10, top 5 picture, is continually getting a playoff game in the Rose Bowl, I think everyone else is going to say, come on, you know, how fair is that? Especially, let's say a team like Boise State finds their way back in, or in whatever alternate universe this would happen, TCU,
yeah,
you know, one of those caliber of teams finds their way back into that national title picture. You know, what would that look like watching Boise State play USC in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, very pro-USC crowd, I think that. So, okay, so that's basically it for this week. Those two matchups, those two Pac-12 you know, powerhouses going at it. You know, do you think of, can you think of anything else that we should look out for this week?
Pretty boring week.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the you know, college football always gets off to a really hot start with a lot of awesome games the first week, and then weeks 2 and 3 are always kind of a drag. One game I'll be watching as an SEC fan is Ole Miss Vanderbilt.
Oh.
Vanderbilt looked awful in their first game under the new coach.
Right.
And, you know, looked pretty good. And Ole Miss is a top 15 team, and they've kind of been a team in the past 2 or 3 years, especially under Freeze and with his great recruiting, that's been, you know, the really sexy pick, you know, to make noise in SEC West.
Yeah.
And to me, they've yet to kind of cash in on any of those bets. They always kind of just kind of, you know, shuffle their feet along and kind of hit at that 8-win mark. I don't think Vanderbilt was nearly as bad as they were in their first game. And the reason I'm interested in this game is Vanderbilt's going to be looking to prove something under their new coach. And last year, I don't know if you watched the opener, was Ole Miss at Vanderbilt,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And Ole Miss won that game at like the last second.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they came right back, and, you know, Vanderbilt had it basically in the last minute or two.
Right.
And I believe this game is going to be in Nashville, so it's going to be in front of the raucous Vanderbilt crowd, which is, you know, kind of pretty cheap. But, yeah, I think there's a legitimate chance that Ole Miss could lose this game. And looking at the other top 25 games, it looked kind of boring. So I'd say keep your eye on this one.
All right, and I'll say on Friday night, whenever you have nothing better to do except for sit in front of the TV, instead of getting caught up on all of your DIY shows, your Yard Crashers, your Married at First Sight shows, or anything like that, Pitt BC, you know, ACC opener. Pitt, you know, like I said earlier, only got 57 yards total offense to Delaware. And, yeah, let's see if the Panthers can continue going forward. Anything you're working on that you want to plug right here for a place to be for this upcoming week?
No, I've kind of been in a scurry lately. I started school back up.
There you go.
College football. You know, my life, you know, I love all sports. I've done for the site baseball, hockey, soccer, foot, college and pro. I love every sport. But I definitely live and die for college football. So I think my friends know that during the college football season, I kind of, you know, and hard to reach because I'm on Rivals.com and a whole bunch of other recruiting sites, you know, 24/7. But I did my conference previews for the website. I did the Big 12, SEC, and Pac-12. And then, you know, I think you handled some of the other ones for us. So I think our podcast listeners should check those out. It's not too late.
No, not. Yeah,
or they can what's what.
Or they can make fun of us for how wrong we were about some other things. So that works as well.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, this week's going to be over before we know it. We'll be back next Friday for the next episode. You can catch both of us on Twitter and also the show on Twitter or at Place to Be Nation. So we thank you for coming in for another week. And Todd, we'll catch you next weekend.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this week's show of the TJ and Todd Tailgate. Remember, you can follow the show on Twitter at TJ Matthews or at Todd Gessling, or even follow all the Place to Be Nation podcasts by going to Place to Be Nation's website or on Twitter at Place to Be Nation.